Welcome to the Andy Tenti Podcast, number 1003. Hey, Nashville, I will be in your town this weekend, which is May 30th, the 31st, and June 1st at Zanies 2019, and the following weekend at Wise Guys in Salt Lake City, Utah. Go to id10t.com for ticket links to that stuff. And now let's go to your community corkboard. Horn section. That's the best horn section we should get? Yeah, is, you know, got them on Craigslist. I don't know. This is a last minute fill-in. Well, I've really created a whole narrative here for this. So Mr. Bram writes, I love hearing about things others start, so I want to tell you about my thing. It's called Fit the Fam. This is a car review channel on YouTube where I, a father of three small kids, review cars from a parent's perspective. I go so far as to actually install three different kinds of car seat in every car I review. I'm the only one on YouTube looking at how car seats fit in each car. I will also be reviewing car seats and products that make parenting while in a car easier. The channel is Fit the Fam. It's on YouTube and all the social sites, and you can link through to it by going to fitthefam.com. Well done. Someday when I have little tiny humans, I'm gonna watch the thing. Because if I don't have kids, watching that might be weird. This is for, but good job. Good job, Mr. Bram. This is from Stefan, who writes, my friend Annie and I combined our two loves in life, bowling, yes, and all things nerd. Come on. The Tactical Cube 138 League is a 12-week summer league starting May 29th. We want to bring people together to celebrate nerd culture while bowling. Oh my God, I'm so fucking on board this. Dude, movies, anime, cartoons, cosplay, comic books, and anything in between. During the league, we will have raffles and theme nights like cosplay night, comic book night, Star Trek night. In the Denver area, want to meet some fellow nerds and some bowling thrown in. Our meeting and first night is May 29th at 6 p.m. at Bolero in Lakewood, Colorado. Any questions, people can call 303-980-0300. Ah, see, there's a 300. It's a bowling number. Or email. Yeah, like my dad's bowling center, the last four digits are 2695 because it spells bowl. It's just a fun thing that bowling centers do. Or you can email these folks, Stefan at nerdbowlingleague@gmail.com. God damn it. I used to live in the 303. I could have gone to that. Can I feasibly fly back there every week for 12 weeks? No, probably not. But I will be with you in spirit. God, I need a nerd bowling league in my life. Anyway, events at id10t.com is how you can register your thing or the thing of a person that you like or care about. This episode is Alexandra Shipp, who plays Storm in Dark Phoenix, which is in theater June 7th. And she is also in Son of Shaft the following weekend, opening June 14th. But she's great. Oh my God, I had so much fun talking to her. And we took the picture afterwards. And I tried like three different ways to take the proper selfie with a statue of a polar bear that I have. And she goes, no, you're shooting it all wrong. You're shooting from underneath. What are you doing? Like one shot, she took the perfect selfie picture. See, we need to embrace the knowledge that the millennials have about this digital age that we live in. But Alexandra was just such a great conversation and such a cool human. And now I'm like really invested in her career. I'm a big fan because, she just has such a great story. So just listen. I believe you will be on board for all that as well. And I'm so excited to see what she does after Dark Phoenix and even after Son of Shaft, which she's going to do great things, even greater things. So thank you to Alexandra Shipp for coming on and being a phenomenal guest. And again, it's one of the things I love about the podcast. Like, oh, there are people that come on and I don't really know much about them personally. And I just get to unlock all these wonderful human things about them and learn in the process. And, you know, it's like, it just reminds me that the podcast is a great reminder that it's so important to sit down and have conversations with people in real life, even people that you don't normally get to hang out with. So I hope that even if you don't have a podcast, you are encouraged to go out and just have conversations with people, because I feel like this is what people were meant to do, have conversations with each other. So this is the ID Tenti podcast number 1003 with Alexandra Shipp. Roll it.
Initiating ID Tenti protocol.
doing?
I'm good.
Good.
I'm good.
Now, have you started gearing up for all of the Dark Phoenix press yet?
Yeah. Okay, so it's it's full. It's full on.
It's not full on. It's a slow crawl, and then it's just going to be like a giant clusterfuck at the end. You know what I mean?
Different country every day.
Yeah, it's going to be like one thing to the next, which is really fun and exciting. But in the beginning, it's like you're kind of like, it's like double dutch.
Yeah.
And you're kind of just waiting for the swing. And you're like, call me in, coach.
Yeah, where are we today? We're in China, tomorrow in Australia. Okay, great. That makes perfect sense.
Got it. Yeah. How much do I have to sleep? How many melatonins do I have to take?
Oh my God, melatonin used to save my ass on the road so much when I was traveling. But I can't take it anymore.
Did you get used to it?
I got used to it, and then I was starting to feel, I never used to feel it before, and I got to a place where I started to feel it the next day.
Yeah.
And so I had to stop taking it.
Yeah.
Do you sleep a full night of melatonin, or is it, because it gives me like 4 straight hours and that's it.
Well, I can sleep, I was raised by a single mom, so I can sleep anywhere.
Oh, okay.
As long as I can.
Gotcha.
I'm like the queen of cat naps. I will curl up in a ball somewhere and I'll like do like a quick 5-minute power.
The 20-minute nap is a big deal. If you can master the 20-minute nap,
it's
in
so
good shape.
Real. But also as an actor, you know, you're exuding so much emotion a lot of the time that it does take a lot out of you.
Of course.
You know, so you're like, okay, we have 30 minutes for lunch. I'm going to eat my lunch in my trailer, turn the heat all the way up to 80, sleep for a good 20 minutes, mm-hmm. and then get back in the chair for hair and makeup touches.
Yep.
It's so you have to figure out a rhythm, and I've figured out a rhythm, which is really hot trailers and a full belly.
Yeah, but then how do you come out of that coma in 30
Sometimes
minutes?
It's hard. Sometimes it's way rougher.
Yeah.
More rough. I don't know. Sometimes it's worse. But, you know, you kind of just have to, like, kick yourself out of it. Sometimes it can be really hard, though, and you're, like, grumpy and someone knocks at your trailer and you, like, open the door and it's pitch black and you got one eye open and you're like, what?
Your trailer's like a hot yoga room.
Basically. They're like, oh, they're ready for you on set. And I'm like, bleh.
Are they?
Are they?
Are they really?
Are they? Or is everyone back from lunch?
Or am I going to sit around for an hour?
Yeah. Am I going to hurry up and wait? I could have gotten an extra 5. Sometimes it's like that.
That it is. It is. But that's the thing that I feel like in acting classes, there should be full like nights devoted to, all right, you guys have all prepared your scenes.
Yeah.
We're just going to wait around for 4 hours.
Yeah.
And I might ask you to do it, but I might not.
Yeah.
And I might get you up on stage, and then one of the lights is going to go out, and then you're going to have to sit back down and wait another hour.
Yeah. And also, when you're doing something like X-Men, you're in a costume that takes multiple people to get out of, in and out of. You know? So it's like, okay, now I have to sit here, and like on Apocalypse, I had 2 corsets and a waist singer. Because, you know, Storm's body is basically unrealistic. I mean, unless you're Jada Pinkett, but like not everyone can be Jada Pinkett Smith. You know what I mean?
Well, and also, you know, they're superheroes who are supposed to be superhuman.
Mm-hmm.
But I also I also think that teaching people to, because, you know, like people just learn to act. They learn how to access emotions. They learn how to be in scenes. They learn how to create backstories and histories.
Yeah.
But the skill set of learning how to do that under, which is basically like a steeplechase of things that you have to like stop, start, wait, close up, do this 30 times.
Yeah.
Now do this. Now do coverage. Now come back and do it all again tomorrow.
It's so beautiful.
Yeah. You like that process?
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love the idea of lighting and stage direction and marks. I like hitting my marks. It's like a dance. It's like music. And when you make things different but the same, it just totally can change the entire tone of the scene.
Yeah.
I just did a job for Annapurna. It's a video game called Telling Lies.
Mm-hmm.
And what was really beautiful about it, well, first of all, it was like a 230-page script.
Oh, my gosh.
So.
Oh, because there's probably a lot of, like, options and choices and.
Totally. And it's kind of, and they've explained it to me a million times, but I don't play a lot of video games, so I'm not very, I haven't understood it and I haven't played it yet. But the way that we shot it was really beautiful and it felt like theater because you would do the entire scene all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with Logan Marshall Green, who is a fantastic actor. And this dude would memorize like 10 pages at a time. And the way that we shot it was like it was a bunch of FaceTimes. So I would be holding the camera and I'd be walking around and hitting different marks and showing him something in the space. But I had to camera op because no one could be in the room.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy. So you're basically the point of view. Like it's
FaceTime. Holding.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's FaceTime.
Yeah.
But I'm holding the camera, making sure that I don't get, you know, the camera in the back of shot in a mirror, or like making sure that I'm in frame, but also not pantomiming. Like I'm showing him keys and I'm not like, you know, jingling it right in front of my face, you know, and you don't want it to be too on the nose. But it was really beautiful because I got a chance to kind of feel like I was back in theater. I started in theater when I was 10, so it was cool to kind of be back there and be hitting those beats and knowing you only get one take.
Right.
Yes, we got to do it a couple of times, but also, you know, there's only so many times you can do 5 to 6 to 10 pages.
Right.
All the way through.
Right.
Nonstop. And it was just really cool how we would just go in and out. And I loved that. I loved that whole dance.
Well, yeah, because you're doing a big budget superhero movie, I would imagine it's a little more... probably a little more chopped up because you have to, there's like effects and you gotta, there's a lot of shit going on. Yeah. And there's
also so many people that are on camera that like I move in the slightest and I'm completely shadowing, you know, Dark Phoenix's face.
Right.
And so there's so much that goes into it that's technical. Mm-hmm. And it's what really made me fall in love with screen acting in particular, because with theater, you're doing it big and you're trying to get it to the back of the house. But with acting, it's all subtle. It's just so subtle. And in that subtlety lies like a lot of beautiful layers. And it's really beautiful to watch and see how someone can be intricate. Plus, I'm like really overly technical about things. So like I like to have a good rapport with my DP or my camera op.
Oh, that's so smart. You have to.
Yeah, I'm like, what's your frame? What are you trying to achieve? What are you trying to see? Where's your eye at?
Because they're going to make you look the best, cuz that's what they're doing.
Well, that, but also I'm going to make them look the best.
That's right.
You know, we help each other. They can light my face and I look like I'm 12 years old, or I can make sure that we're not doing a million fucking takes.
Right.
You know, so we help and feed each other. And I love that. And I worked on this job called Tragedy Girls, where we were editing it while we were shooting it.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was really beautiful because I was able to develop a really good rapport with our editor, because he's on set just like in a closet somewhere, you know, editing it. I'm able to see the tone of the movie. I'm able to see the type of jokes and beats and paces that they're going for. So then it turned, I could fall into the swing of things and I can deliver every day, but also be like, okay, so I know that this is what you guys want. I know this is how you're going to do it, but like, give me a take.
Right. But not all actors can do that though, because if they stand behind the editor and start look, they'll go, oh, you know, like they get in their head or like, oh, why are you using that? Oh, I didn't like that take. Oh, you know, and it can really fuck them up.
Yeah.
And so you know, it sounds like you have a little more of a director's brain, which can remove you from that kind of emotional stuff, which can really trip. Like there's some actors, you know, like Andy Lincoln on Walking Dead would never watch the show because he just didn't want his performance affected by his judgment.
Yeah.
And so that's a really dangerous thing. So that's a really good skill set to have.
But you're feeding the audience. You know what I mean? And also when you're working on jobs and from an actor's standpoint, you don't know what you're seeing. You don't, a lot of the time, you don't get to watch the take back. Mm-hmm. A lot of actors don't like to watch the take back. I personally do, because I want to know what it looks like and what we're trying to do, because I don't want to do a million takes.
Right.
Or if we are doing some Kubrick million take stuff, then like, I want to know, you know, like, I don't want them to just be like, again, like, hold on a minute. Calm down, Stan. What are we doing? Why?
Did you just call Stanley Kubrick Stan?
I did.
That's great.
I did.
I never thought of him as a Stan before. That just blew my mind.
He's Stan the man.
It's right there. And I never thought of Kubrick as a Stan. Stan. I get it.
What are we doing?
The elevators open up, the blood pours out, but for fuck's sake, we've been doing this shot for 3 months.
Come on, Kubi. Kubi. Come on, Koobs.
Kubi is the guy in your friend group in high school that is the, like, he's the fuck up.
Totally.
Kubi, why did you stop? Oh, God.
Who then becomes a billionaire because he spent all of his time making hilarious videos in his parents' garage.
Who shit in the trunk? Kubi!
Kubi! He's wild, but he's creative.
Yeah, he is. He's very creative.
And he can get there.
He can get there, but it takes a while.
It does.
But then...
I don't mind a lot of takes. You know what I mean? But... I want to know that we got what we're looking for, so now it's open to play.
Right.
You know, it's like, okay, yeah, we've got the 60th take. 61 is for me. Ooh, this is going to be something different. It's going to either be a comedy. It's going to be a softcore. I'm going to change it up, honey, because I did it 60 times the same way with, again.
Softcore. Could you just play a light saxophone underneath? I'm not sure this is really appropriate, but we'll try it. We'll try it. Well, you know what? That's the thing about taking wild swings like that is that you never know what direction that's going to take you in. Never. And you never know how it's going to affect the chemistry of the other people. And, you know, I've worked on stuff before, like more in animation, where they'll say, okay, do the as written take. Now do an insane crazy take. Just improvise. Doesn't matter. Just be as weird and wild and dirty as you want.
Yeah.
We probably won't use most of it, but then the take after that, everyone's super connected.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's beautiful to see, like, you know, I like being surprised by other actors and their choices. I think it keeps it fresh and interesting. I don't like when I'm doing a scene and someone's like, oh, I've decided that I'm going to literally stand in front of the camera on your single.
That's
like,
a bad improv.
Like, bruh, what is your dirt? Like, now we can't use any of this. And now we've got the back of your head. Like, no offense, great backing. But, like, you know, so it's like those moments where you're like.
Is backing when someone's back is right in front of the camera?
Oh, 100%.
I like that term.
I do solid backing. I think that's what's going to get me my first award. Someone's going to be like, yo, when she swiveled her neck from the back.
Oh, in the Screen Actors Guild Awards.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's definitely going
to
be from my peers.
And then you have to accept the awards. You have to walk backwards onto stage.
I'm going to dress like Criss Cross.
And come out to jump.
And I'm going
to
come out like, jump, jump. Don't this award make you want to jump? Come on.
That song came out the year you were born. So I appreciate that you have a respect for the classics.
Oh, 100%.
Like Jump, Jump.
Oh, 100%. Criss Cross was my jam.
What did you watch when you were growing up?
I am a cartoon buff.
Okay.
I've always loved cartoons, graphic novels, stuff like that. So growing up, I was definitely a Nick kid.
Mm-hmm.
I watched a lot of Nickelodeon, Angry Beavers, Hey Arnold,
Rugrats Doug, Ren and Stimpy,
Wild Thornberries, all the jazz.
Mm-hmm.
All the jazz. I loved cartoons growing up.
Do you do cartoon voiceovers now?
I don't. I mean, I still audition and stuff for things like that, but I like cartoons, and I like the idea of it taking me away to some two-dimensional world that is completely outside of a norm, and I don't have to focus on acting cues and stuff like that, because I'll find myself, like, watching a really great movie, and, like, I won't like someone's performance, or I'll be like, you know, they could have gone so much farther there. They needed about two more takes, you know?
Yeah.
And then it would have blown me away, and it would have created so many more layers. And I, like, get into, like, my thinking brain whenever I'm watching, like, human stuff.
Yeah.
So I like watching cartoon things because I can come up with my own interpretation. I have my own idea. It's why I love playing Storm, is because I'm not, you know, stuck to feeling like she's one thing or another. She's a cartoon. I get to play with her.
Right.
I get to be her, but human. What does that look like?
Yeah, and that's, like, that's the sort of, the superhero genre really is just a great live-action cartoon, ultimately, is what we're watching.
Yeah, which is exciting, and I can say from experience that you show up on set and it took four people to get you into your costume, but you're feeling good. And you get on set and it's just exactly out of the comics. It's so well done. The people who are set decks and our HODs, they just do such a great job when it comes to making you feel like you are not where you are.
Mm-hmm.
And you get there and you're like, oh, everything looks like the comic. I look like the comic. Oh my God, am I in a comic right now? I remember my first day I was working with Olivia Munn,
who is
a huge fan, especially of Psylocke, and loves comics.
I've known Olivia as a dear friend of mine. We worked at G4 together many years ago.
She's a nerd. She's literally the best and one of the funniest people I know. So we both walk on set. She's dressed like Psylocke, having her own little mental breakdown about how lit she is. And I'm like in a corner by myself, like, I'm dressed like Storm. Oh my God, I'm on this incredible set. Oh my God, there's like 5 cameras. Is that Michael Fassbender? And I just lock eyes with Olivia. And we're both like, this is fire.
Yes.
And had just a total geek out moment. We're like, oh,
I know,
here.
She's great.
So great.
Olivia's great.
But it's cool because you literally, and when you have that type of a set and that type of a costume and hair and makeup department, you really, it's easy to slip into that world. When they call action, you're not in America. You're in Gotham.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just a totally, it's not New York, it's Gotham. It's
right.
Just different, more gritty, more exciting, more visceral, and so many more possibilities. There's so much freedom that comes to the world that you have to put yourself in as an X-Man or as a mutant in that type of space.
Yeah, as opposed to the types of performances where they're like, okay, you're a woman who is sad.
Right, you have cancer. Go.
Go.
And you're like, oh, okay. What kind of cancer? The one that they don't have enough research on or haven't
probably
been
that
able
one.
To cure?
Yeah, probably that one. Rolling.
Yeah. The one that I can't afford? Got
That's
it.
The one. Yeah.
Well,
go with that.
Is it covered by?
No, probably not. I mean, and if it is, it's going to take a lot of years and they're going to fight you in court and the insurance company is probably going to end up winning because they're just too big and powerful.
And if you actually come out of this, then it'll be way hard for you to get insurance or anything else
ever again. Yeah. So. Okay, so go.
America.
Go.
Whereas in Marvel Land.
That's right.
In Marvelville, they've got a pill. Or, you know, you just get bitten by a radioactive spider.
The types
and
of things that would normally give you a terminal disease give you superpowers.
Give you superpowers.
Oh, I got bit by a radioactive thing. I actually have superpowers and not horrible cancer.
Well, yeah. I mean, just look at Daredevil. I mean, a little schmutz in the eye, and this guy has incredibly heightened senses.
Very heightened senses.
And is insanely good at karate for someone who can't see what he's doing.
And can heal his body.
Come on.
To a degree.
Come on.
I mean, that's great.
From a little schmutz.
Just a little bit of schmutz in the eyes.
Just a little radioactive schmutz.
Just a tincture of radioactive schmutz.
Where do I get these drops?
I don't know.
They sell them at Walgreens?
Yes, they're at Walgreens and CVS.
Are they over the counter?
But they're locked. You know, like you have to get the attendant
to come out.
They're by the deodorant.
Yeah, by the deodorant, condoms, and the Tide Pods.
By the condoms, yes, exactly, and the Tide Pods. Some of it is Tide Pod, actually.
I can't believe. I was at the grocery store the other day, and I was like, where are all of the Tide Pods?
Because people fucking eat them.
What?
I know. It's why?
It's soap. Remember when that was a punishment?
Yeah.
Remember when your mom caught you cursing or popping off in some sort of way and you had to get like a little drop of something on your tongue?
Yeah. Yeah, I know, but I think it's just the idea.
Now people want that?
It's more for social media attention than it is.
This isn't Marvel World.
No, it's not.
It's not going to give you superpowers.
Even in that world, they wouldn't eat.
What would your superpower be, though?
What would mine be?
Like, would you be like, suds? You know what I mean?
I think you
What's
could...
What's your superpower?
You could fart a bubble that you could then get in and then it would transport you. Like,
ooh.
It would sort of be like a mode of transportation. But the downside was that it's like a horribly embarrassing expression of the power. It's like you have to fart a bubble. But once you do that, it's fine. And sometimes...
Do you have to take your pants off to do it?
Oh, boy.
Do you have to drop trow for said traveling bubble?
You know, if Spider-Man doesn't have to take off his... costume
gloves?
To shoot webs or to be able to climb on stuff,
then
maybe not. Like, maybe it has some sort of a fiber. Like, if you get the right suit, you have to have the suit designed by someone. Otherwise, you just shit your pants.
Right.
But if you don't do that, then yes. If you have the right suit, then you could have a, you know, like a really... And also, no one would want to ride with you.
That's what I was going to say. Last and final question is, is the gas inside of said bubble a fart?
Yes, of course it is. But you can't smell your own farts.
I mean, everyone likes their own brew, but no one's going to want to travel
and
in your
the
fart.
Problem is that you show up to save someone and they're like some villain in Prison.
Thanks,
Island.
I'm good.
Okay, let's go. And they're like, you know what? I'll take the next one. Like, there isn't a next one. Well,
honestly,
I'm sorry.
Where the cops at? Like, I'll ride in the back. Cuff me.
No.
I so do not want whatever you're about to sell me. But also, solid superpower.
Not bad.
That's what happens when you eat a radioactive Tide Pod in Marvel Land.
You become Sudzor.
Suds for short.
Suds. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I always, whenever I have superhero dreams, I always have Spider-Man powers.
Totally.
But I'm not even sure that he, you know, like of superheroes that I loved growing up, it's not like I ever thought I want to be Spider-Man, but those are just the, like, I don't really have flying dreams. Yeah. I don't have any other dreams. I just have, like, crawling on walls and shooting webs. I don't know why.
Huh, interesting.
Do you, what's yours?
Mine was always flying. Mm-hmm. Growing up, I remember this dream so vividly. I was like 9 years old and I got bullied as a kid. And all I wanted to do was like to show up to school and then like just be hovering over everyone and be like, you were all fucking wrong.
I mean, to a degree, Storm could do that.
She totally could. She does fly. But like, I kept it so basic. I didn't have any powers other than the fact that I could personally
put yourself above them.
Put myself above them. But then I was also like, I remember in the dream, like for a long time, I couldn't get off the ceiling. You know,
right.
It was almost kind of like that Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory,
oh,
where
right.
I burped too much.
Yep.
I was too high, and like there was no getting down.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I never, because I had the same, I feel like most people get bullied, do you think?
I feel like everyone got bullied except for, and if people say that they didn't get bullied, it's because they were the bully.
That's right.
That's what I think. And I think that everyone has their moments in which they're a bully. You know, like, I always am joking around with my friends and, like, trash talking. And I am always giving the people I love the most, like, the most hard of times. And
yeah.
Sometimes when you're joking around with people, especially people that you know really well and love, you can kind of really strike a nerve and either trigger them or create some sort of trauma or whatever. So it's hard because, especially as a girl, you know, I mean, we've played both sides a few times. That was my Sean Connery.
That was a good Sean Connery.
Thank you.
I'm the last dragon.
We play both sides.
I'm the last dragon.
We definitely did at one point. Every 14-year-old girl is the worst human being on the planet Earth. You know, you show up and you're like, oh my God, can you believe that Kathy decided to wear pink on the day that we all wear pink?
She's a bitch.
She's a total pose. Everyone has done something like that.
But that's, you know, and that's why it's funny to me that so many nerds can become like online bullies and they don't think of it as bullying. But it's like if you're trying to take someone down,
yeah.
And you're either hiding behind a screen name,
yeah.
Or you're, you know, it's like that's what that is. Like,
yeah.
That's what that is.
No, totally. And also, you know, I think that majority of cops were kids who were bullied. You know, and it's not so easy to become a cop, but like a lot of the time you're like, honestly, a lot of people that I went to school with that got bullied back home are cops.
Is that true?
I'm just going to say it. Like, I know that the numbers in my experience out of my class of X, like a handful of people who like were kind of loners and didn't have a lot of friends. And like, I was the type of person where I would be like, hey, come sit with me. Not everyone likes that.
Where did you grow up?
Arizona.
Oh, you grew up in Arizona. Okay,
yeah.
I was trying to get a line. Hey, come over here. Yeah,
come sit with
there.
Me. No
there
one talks
go.
Like that. I want you to know that that's just me. That's really
no. I grew
weird.
Up in the South. There are people who talk that way.
Yeah, but like I don't. So
yeah,
that's
okay.
why it's kind of sad. But I'd be like, come hang out with me. And they're like, oh, no, too much. Like, I can be a bit too much a lot of the time. But yeah, those people definitely became cops or some type of enforcer of some sort. Whether
so you're
they're
telling,
a security
like in the senior
guard,
in high school, if they're starting to grow the mustache, you're like, I know where that's going.
I know exactly
I
what you're trying
what
to do.
I what you're doing.
Look, this isn't Miami Vice. Unroll your sleeves.
Isn't it nice, though, that you found a career that allowed you to express all the, because you know when you say like, oh, I can be a bit much, you're just theatrical, like it's like people
yeah.
have that theater energy where you want to engage and you want to perform and you want
entertain
to
entertain and make people laugh and
yes.
all of that
yes,
affects
yes, yes.
people.
And sometimes, and I know because I have it too, I remember it was a little much in life.
Yeah.
And other kids didn't really know how to deal with it because yeah. most other kids are not that way.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that I was able to find, but then when you get around, like for me, comedy, or you get around other actors and you're yeah. like, oh my God, these are my people. Like they do it too. You no, did that too.
It strikes a chord inside of you where you're like, huh? I can be myself.
Yes. Like, and then someone else is like, me yeah. also.
So wonderful. But yes. then there's also people who are like, hey, can you guys just be a little bit more quiet?
What do you mean?
It's overwhelming. I'm getting overwhelmed.
That's who you know how not to hang out with.
Well, I was just about to say, that's what separates the herd if it does not. Mm. I'm the type of person where I'm like, I'm vibrating at a certain frequency. So if you're not going to meet me there, I'm not going to come down.
Right.
Like, I don't do that unless I'm on set and it's a pullback note. Like,
yeah. And see,
I'm only going to be me 100% of the time. So either you can keep up or you can get out.
So the people that in school were probably like, you need to take it down a notch. Like yeah. when you go, let's see, I'm guessing you're probably born 91.
Yeah, wow, nice.
So if you were born in 91, you would have graduated around 2009.
Mm-hmm. 2008, I graduated early.
Okay, you graduated early. Oh, very fancy. Mm-hmm. So you would have already had your 10-year reunion if there was one.
If there was one, yeah. I but graduated early online.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, so I finished my junior year.
So your high school reunion was just a chat room. Hey guys,
basically, like people showed up to the graduation in PJs.
Fantastic.
Which I respected. I wore a dress.
That's nice.
Some church heels.
That's really nice.
Yeah, thank you.
But I was just thinking, like when you meet those people later in life, if you have, you know, like now mm-hmm. that you're a very successful actor, now they'll be like, I always knew you were going to do something really special. And you're like, 10 years ago, you were shitting on me. What are
yeah,
you talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, 100%. But also, if they request me on Facebook, I'll hella add them.
So they can see your fabulous life?
Yeah. And they've got like 4 kids and they like hate themselves. And I'm like, look at what karma is.
I mean, come on.
Look at what karma is, because all I ever did when I was younger was try to make people like me. I think that that's what creates artists and creates actors and comedians, is we're just, you're the class clown. You're trying to make people laugh. You're trying to, and as a girl, you just want people to like you, bro. Like, just period. I couldn't get a date or nothing, Jesus.
You know, guys want that too, though. I remember that. Yeah, I didn't
so
have a lot of friends.
Toxic masculinity and toxic femininity that holds us back from expressing who we truly are and what we actually want. You know, it's like, oh, don't be too big because everyone's not being that big. Well, okay, I don't have to meet the average. And guess what? Neither do you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, listen, I grew up in the South, and I'm not a sports fan. I don't understand sports.
Wow.
And
that
you
must
know,
have been really hard.
It was very weird, yeah. you know. So like, when you don't, this toxic masculinity that you're talking about, like when I don't connect with other bros about yeah. stuff that bro, you know, it's like yeah. I don't know what to talk to you about. I like computer games. I like D&D. I like comedy. I don't know what to say.
You D&D?
Of course. I mean, you know, I'm considerably older than you are, so I still have my original D&D books from when they were original.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Not the reprinted copy from 2007?
Oh, no. Shit's real.
Fabulous.
No, I don't have the original from the 70s, like those like leaflet versions.
Yeah.
But I have like the like those original hardcover
That's
books
so
in storage.
I love D&D.
Yeah.
D&D was like my first view into character building.
Of course.
That was my first thing where I was like, wait.
And teamwork.
I can be anything? No, no, no. Fuck teamwork. I don't team up in D&D, bro.
Oh, shit.
I go ham. You're looking at, what is her name? Zathina. I'm level 1 because
okay.
I, like, still suck, but I, like, enjoy the game and I like to have fun and I'm not competitive, but...
What's your alignment then? Like, would you play, like, evil characters or do you play, like, chaotic good or...
I'm more of an elven princess who likes spells.
Okay.
And likes to go on her own quests.
Mm-hmm.
But like if other people want to join, that's cool. But like it's my quest. I'm not gonna like join some troll mm-hmm. on his quest to
right.
go find more trolls. Like
right,
get
right,
here.
Right.
Gotta get
right.
a hobbit.
Yeah.
What is this? The ring? Get out of here. I'm on my way to the top mountain so I can become the high priestess and I can rule all of you with my fairy powers. Like, I love creating different characters with D&D.
I just love the idea that you get someone to DM for you and it's just the two of you. And he's like, shouldn't there be a party? No, just give me the top of that fucking mountain. I'm trying to find a thing.
Let me know.
Give me powers.
Other people are around. Like, it's not just me and, like, a master. Like, I'm okay. There are other people there.
Okay, 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 okay.
They're good. Just subsidiary characters.
You guys, all you guys know, so the dwarf is second on the call sheet, the barbarian third on the call sheet.
Know your place.
Oh, I'm just in character. I'm just in character, you guys.
Oh, sorry. No, I'll come in character. I have elf ears and like a little satchel. I have a bow and arrow. It's kid size, of course, because I'm going to carry around a bow and arrow.
I feel like I'm going
to
have
so much fun.
I'm going to have to introduce you to some really great D&D people that I think you would really enjoy.
Yeah. I love a good story.
Yeah.
But also, like, I like to have fun. So, like, for me, I'm always constantly like, hey, what's that rule and can we bend it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is our quest. So how many of, like, the certain things do we have to, like, specifically follow?
Well, the right DM will tell you, like, you can bend the rule if you can make this, if you roll, you know, like, if you can make the throw,
then maybe
there's a way that you can bend this. But there's, the good DMs know how to be flexible, but they still know how to keep everything within a structure and on track and keep it very cinematic and very, you know.
Exciting.
Yeah. And it's, I especially think D&D is great for anyone who felt like you and I did when we were growing up that didn't really connect with other people, that still allows you to express all of that, all of that energy, you know,
all of that
creative anger.
It's a lot of anger. I'm not gonna lie, I was an angry kid. Like, I was, that's why I think I wanted the quests to be all about me. It was because, you know, I have this superstar athlete older brother, and I'm like not very athletic or competitive, and I was weird, and I had really messed up teeth, and I didn't know what I was doing with my hair because my mom had no idea what she was doing with my hair. I don't think anyone in the 90s and early 2000s really knew what to do with mixed hair, like, in general.
Right.
Let alone just curly hair.
Right.
You know, so I was looking wild. No one hang out with me unless they, like, thought I was funny and liked my jokes. You know, that was the only thing that kept me going was, like...
And you're in Arizona where it's, like, you're on the fucking surface of the sun for a good chunk of the
year. Surface of the sun, but it's also very conservative. But I did go to an art school that kind of helped instill... like a nerd sanctuary.
Well, that's good. As long as you stay indoors. Like, honestly, in August, running around Phoenix is like you're like an ant trying to escape a magnifying glass.
I feel so bad for people who play sports. I bet you that's also another reason why I was like, it's hot. Can we go inside?
You want to run outside? Are you fucking crazy?
I'm already sweating.
I mean, come on, you guys.
I can't.
Well, I'm so interested to hear about this, though, because it sounds like they're, you know, as a... as a developing teenager, developing your psyche, what it feels like there's a lot of swirling identities here.
Mm-hmm.
And so what, like, how did you reconcile that, or where did you, you know, did the internet help at all? Like, at least be able to connect with other people? or did you, like, how do you, like, what do you think your identity was, and what was your search for your identity when you were growing up?
The only online community that was, like, real for when I was growing up was Chat Roulette, which, as we all know, is just all dicks. So, like, there wasn't me, like, finding
they should have just called it
online.
Dick Roulette. It should have just been called Dick Roulette.
It was, like, AOL Instant Messenger, or it was, like, Chat Roulette. Like, there wasn't, like, a lot of places where you could go and find like-minded people who didn't want to be like, oh, send me a picture.
Right.
Like, you know, so there is that. But I realized when I was really young that I was not going to be a sports or athletic person. Mm-hmm. My parents are both athletic and academic driven. My brothers are very much so like that. And I'm super not.
Mm-hmm.
I like to be inside. I like to play instruments. I like to read comics and watch cartoons. I like to play music, and I put on little skits and shows. And very quickly, my parents put me into theater at 10.
Smart.
And because also everyone's like, she has ADD, but my mom's a total hippie and was like, we must channel it, not drug it. So I started in theater. Just like, you know, good for her, right? And then... I played, do you know the children's book, The Stinky Cheese Man?
No.
It's fantastic. It's about this.
The Stinky Cheese Man?
Yeah. He's kind of like the puck or like the narrator of the story.
Okay.
And then all of these different fairy tales are going on around him, like Princess and the Pea and stuff. I played the Stinky Cheese.
All right. Good. Well
I had
done.
A cheese hat. It was fantastic. And I was like, this is it. this is it. I got the bug. The minute that spotlight hit me and I gave him my first stinky cheese line, I was like, okay, this is me. I drank the Kool-Aid. I loved it. And I just kept doing that. I was fortunate enough to have the type of mom who would just regularly check in with me and be like, hey, are you still doing what you want to do? Okay, cool. And then spends an insane amount of money putting me in the right programs in which I can do that.
But then who are you in the quiet moments? Because I did read a little bit about you, and I know your mother was a yoga instructor.
Yeah.
So when you have all this manic energy, like, mm-hmm. like bouncing off, and I don't mean like clinically manic, but I just mean you have all this energy.
I'm manic. No, it's diagnosed. It's manic.
You know, and so, you know, your mom is an instructor of finding your center, finding your peace, and whatever. So are you able to have quiet moments? And when you do, is that a different, is there someone underneath the top layer that you protect, or is
she's an emotional basket case,
right?
I mean, as any artist will tell you, there's just because we're loud and outlandish and big doesn't mean that we're also not like big softies on the inside who mm-hmm. just want to be acknowledged.
Mm-hmm.
I think like as artists, we'll accept crumbs and we'll make a whole cake out of it, you know?
And then you're just pulling as many crumbs together.
I'm like a hungry hippo, bro. And I'm about to make a souffle out of them little white balls. That sounded weird.
I think we got the game. Only a few people would have gone to the bad place with that,
which is me.
But that's actually one of the coolest things I think I've ever heard on the podcast is like taking crumbs and making a cake out of it. It's like, yeah, that's what we do, and that's because we don't as performers. It's so difficult to know, like, am I doing this right? There's no, it's not linear.
The validation. It's like a wave.
And that's also the allure of social media. So I want to know, as a millennial, and I feel like millennials do get an unfairly bad rap.
Yes.
About, you know, like, oh, you're too soft, you're too attention hungry, you're too this, you're too that.
Yeah.
What does it feel like from your point of view?
Yeah.
When people say that, are you like, fuck you? I feel this way because of X, Y, or Z, or what you're not seeing is, you know, A, B, C.
Right. Well, for me, I don't get any validation from social media in any way, shape, or form. So, like, because I'm not, like, doing, like, the bikini photos or, like, I'm not politically correct all the time. So there is that side of being a millennial that kind of tips the scale where people are like, oh, so, like, you big on social media or something. I'm like, bro, no. Like, the only reason why I do it is because I have to.
Mm-hmm.
Is because it's a part of my business now. I never thought that I was going to go into marketing, being an actor, but here I am.
Everyone has to be a marketer now.
Everyone has to. Now I got to figure out what my brand is. I'm like, my brand is Shaft, and then it's X-Men, and then it's this, and then it's that, and I'm whatever that needs to be in that moment. But aside from that, you know, who I am is mine.
You know, I feel and if you don't want to talk about this, you certainly don't have to.
It's only going
to
happen.
But I think you may have been, and I know this is a crazy thing in our current media landscape. Oh God, I think you may have been slightly misquoted
all the time.
Because I think there was there something about how. I think you were just sort of making the point of like that you wanted to do a Storm standalone movie and that it was like, no, I'm not shitting on anyone else or any other characters. It's just like it would be nice to do a Storm standalone movie. But I think it got translated into something a little maybe clickbaitier.
Yeah.
About.
Well, totally. And also the thing is that it's context. You need to have context. If I take a snippet of an entire conversation, or if in passing I say something and I only have 5 minutes on the carpet with you
mm-hmm.
and you ask me a question, I'm going to give you a quick short answer,
mm-hmm.
but I probably shouldn't have even answered the question because I was doing it in passing. I'm like, well, not enough time to unload that, you know, but it's me and I pop off and I get excited. And I overdo it. Okay, I'll admit it. I always overdo it. I will always admit that I'm wrong. I stand behind everything I say, and I want someone to prove me wrong. And mm-hmm. I want someone to say, Alex Kurt, it actually is this. And I'm like, you know what? Hand to Jesus, I'm sorry. Like, that was me. You right. But, like, for me, I was asked if I would want to team up and do a movie with Black Panther. And I was like, duh. That would be so lit. But at the same time, I think that it would be really nice to see Storm doing Storm. I think that she needs that standalone movie. No one wants, well, everyone would want to go to see the Avengers, but if you didn't have all those other movies that kind of linked everyone to the Avengers, to them coming together, right. If you don't know the characters, you only know them in the comics, I mean, yeah, you have that. But for me, I'm like, it's nice to watch Thor and then see him join the Avengers.
Right.
It's nice to watch Iron Man's and then see him team up with people. That's fun.
Yeah.
That's interesting to me. And that also creates a lot for an audience. And I think that I feel the same way about Storm. I'm like, I would love to see it. I'd love to do that movie. It would be great if the King and Queen of Africa, with all of their mutant powers and vibranium, came together and like had this awesome badass movie. That would be so lit. That would be so dope. I want that. I would love that. Okay.
Yes.
I would love that. But I want Storm to have a movie too. And also, I have so many like nerd conversations with my friends and my family about a Storm standalone. Everyone's always telling me, no, Storm needs Black Panther because she hasn't had enough in the past X-Men movies to really warrant a whole standalone. And to that, I'm like, well, first of all, we're talking about Storm here. Take away my performance and everyone else's performance in the movies. You're talking about a huge comic book character.
Right.
Who has enough...
history, there's enough history. Yeah.
That I think that it doesn't matter who's playing it, she deserves a standalone movie. Right. I would like to see that. I think that would be amazing. And I know that people will show up for it the way that they showed up for Black Panther, the way they showed up for Wonder Woman, and the way that they showed up for Captain Marvel, and the way they're going to show up for Dark Phoenix
in theaters
June 7, 2019.
Very sly. Very clever. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, that was really nice.
Plant a seed.
That was some nice marketing you did there.
Thank you.
Just drop that in there.
I know my publicist will appreciate that. But I mean, like, I think it would be dope to have that standalone movie, and then it would be great to see them kind of fuse forces and have a Black Panther Storm movie.
I totally agree. I think if they were going to team up Storm and Black Panther, I think it would be essential to have a Storm standalone movie first, because you want to set the characters up so that when, like you said, when you see them come together, it's like, oh,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, Aurora,
you know where they've come from. You've seen it, not only read it and created it in your mind, but you've seen it.
Right.
And are able to then be like, oh, remember when they like had that one nod at each other?
Mm-hmm.
And then like in the next movie, they're teaming up and oh my God, like you can create those through lines.
And who knows? I mean, obviously there's just so much speculation now because of the Disney Fox thing.
Right.
And, you know, like, I feel like someday, and I have no inside information,
right,
but eventually, who knows, 5 or 10 years, they're gonna have to do Avengers versus X-Men. Like, they're just gonna have to do it. Like,
right.
Because it...
Well, because they can't team up. Because that's, like... I mean, like, I grew up on Funkadelics. I love Parliament, but that's a lot of bandmates.
Have you ever been to a Parliament show before?
I've never been to a Parliament
show. Once.
Really? Yeah. A lot of people. All you know is George.
You know George. So they
You know George.
So they have like 3 tour buses. And then there are people who are in the band. And then there are people who are just family.
Yeah.
And they kind of go along for it. And so it's really fun to watch because they... I was interviewing him for something. And so I went to see the show.
Awesome.
And he was great. And the show started. And they go, okay, so... You know, the show's just going to start, and then George will just come out whenever George feels like it's right. And so the show...
Awesome!
So there's, like, all the family members were out, and they were playing and doing all sorts of shit, and there were people who, like, even just had, like, a salt shaker and were just on
fabulous
stage shaking it. And so it was this, like, beautiful, harmonious thing that was going on. And then eventually he just kind of, like, all of a sudden just wandered
rainbow
out.
Rainbow dreads.
Yes, and what's amazing about it is the relationship with the audience is, like, they know that's the deal.
Yeah.
And... even though it's unpredictable, that's sort of the
fun. At least he's going to come out.
At least he's going to come out.
Yeah.
And when he does, it's like, oh, fuck, it finally
he's
happened.
Here. Yeah.
It's good.
It's a nice build. But that's a lot of people. I couldn't name every single person on his band. It's not like the Beatles.
Right.
You know what I mean? So when you're talking, like, I got asked if I would want Storm to join the Avengers. And I'm like, okay, first of all, that'd be so lit. Like, that would be so fire. Like, I would love that. But second of all, like, we already have a huge team of X-Men, and there's already a huge team, and they're adding to it with Avengers. So I'm like, that just feels like a lot of people in one room.
Well, there's a couple less Avengers now, you guys.
Wait, don't spoil anything for me.
I'm not going to say anything.
Don't say anything.
I'm not going to say anything. Why would you do that? I don't know. I just...
You said it.
No, they... It's fine.
Spin it.
It's fine. It's all... It's fine. Hulk kills everyone. But I don't want to... Oh, God, I didn't mean to say that.
I mean, is that a surprise, though? Can you really trust the Hulk? He can't control himself. How long has it been, really?
You know, maybe just see the movie and then we'll talk
Can we get Hulk some beta blockers or something?
Something or some melatonin.
I mean, just drowse him up a bit.
Valerian. You know what? Valerian roots
baby
good.
Benadryl.
The little Benadryl. You know what? Maybe that's his. It's just his whole thing is just an allergic reaction to gamma radiation. Yeah. If he had some Benadryl, he could flush that right out of his system.
What was it that moms in the 60s used to do? A little whiskey on the pacifier?
Oh, bourbon. I think it was bourbon.
For teething babies?
I think it was bourbon.
That's what we need for the Hulk.
Yeah, that's... He just
needs... Just some bourbon to suck on.
He just needs a bourbon pacifier to chill the fuck out for a minute.
We call that a bourbon binky. Can we find a bourbon binky for the Hulk, please?
Can we get the Hulk? And then, yeah, that would solve everything.
But that's a lot of people.
It's a ton of people.
That's a lot of people. And so I was like, yeah, would that be awesome? 100%. Would that be a 5-hour movie just to get a line from everyone? Totally. Plus, that shoot would be so long. It takes so long just to get enough coverage on 5-6 X-Men.
Yeah.
Imagine 20 Avengers and X-Men fused together, all teaming up, the amount of coverage that you'd have to get. I mean, they'd take a year to shoot.
Yeah, but...
And I don't think anyone has the time or the money, especially with the level of stars that they have for the Avengers.
But that's the thing, is that now that you're a part of this genre, and a very significant part of this genre, you know, it's like you're going to get these questions, you're going to get these hypotheticals, and you're going to get a lot of stuff where you're like, I don't know, I was in Australia yesterday, and now I'm in Frankfurt. Like, I don't know, you know?
It's like, but also, you never know how much time you got.
Right.
And so that, for me, is where I always put my foot in my mouth, because I'll give a quick, you know, 3-sentence statement, and then it'll be like, okay, but I didn't have time to elaborate on it, you know? And when you're in those press junkets, you only have 3 to 5 minutes, and these people are looking for clickbait.
And you also...
That's what I forgot.
You have a bit of the comedy curse, too, which is... You might not get the forgiveness curve, because people in those moments might not realize that you're just fucking around.
I'm just joking.
And you have to fuck around to keep yourself sane.
Yeah.
To keep yourself awake.
Yeah.
So you could just throw some funny joke that in context, like, oh, it's so fucking funny she said that. But if it's taken out of context and recontextualized.
Taken out of context, then put in text. And then I read it back and I'm like, oh.
But I hope this doesn't stop you from being you, because that would be a crime, because you should be you, and you should be as funny as you are and want to be, and not, and just like, because that's all that shit's noise.
But I'm not a comedian. I don't go up, I don't do shows. I'm not a comedian.
Energy, though.
Well, thank you. My family, we like to think that we're funny people. When it's a sad moment, we're cracking jokes.
Keep
it light. We always go into bits.
Comedy's like your
movies,
armor.
Funny voices. That's how we get out of awkward situations.
That's exactly right. It's the armor.
But it's hard, because a lot of the time, you know, I'll make a joke and it'll be too dirty or too crass or insanely blunt, but I'll say it with a funny voice and a ba da ba ba da ba.
Yeah.
And it'll get a laugh from the table, and then it'll spread like wildfire that I don't like Black Panther.
Well,
you're just like,
that's not what I said.
What? But also, I do that a lot on Twitter, and that's why I've just like totally deleted the app, is because 260 or 240 characters or whatever is not enough for me to get my point across.
No, there's no context there, and there's conversation.
No context,
there.
And you can share that, and you can create your own, you can take that and create your own narrative. And you know, in the last like 2 years, I've really been experiencing how far we've gone down that rabbit hole as a society when it comes to wanting clickbait, when it comes to people only reading headlines and not watching the interview or listening to the interview. They're taking everything out of context and then creating an entire witch hunt.
That's right.
Based off of one statement.
Yeah,
that someone they don't know, have never met.
And have no investment in,
but they're just like, I hate you.
Yeah.
You said that one thing and now you're done.
Didn't even say that thing, you're saying.
I didn't even say it.
But that's all noise, and I'm glad to hear that you have pulled away from it, in the sense that you're not letting it infect your life and who you are. Because all that stuff, all the clickbait stuff, all of the misquotings and whatever, it's just noise. And people will forget about it. And it shouldn't, you know, I'm just, and my unsolicited advice that you did not ask for is just don't let it stop you from being you, because that's really important.
Yeah.
And your energy is important and it is inspiring to people. And the people that are going to give you shit, and it's like, it's a small percentage of toxic people, and that's more about them than it is you.
Yeah.
And
but honestly, being biracial, I've been bullied my entire life.
Well, that's the other identity question when you're growing up.
Yeah.
You're growing up biracial in Arizona in a certain partly political climate with hippie parents. You like nerdy stuff. You like you're very theatrical.
Yeah.
Everyone else around. So it's like, where are you finding your footing in all
there
of that?
There was no box. There was no box to tick. It was just other, you know? And I got bullied a lot because of that. And I have developed such a thick skin that, you know, it's not as bad as when you were a kid, because people would, like, for real say it to your face.
Sure.
They'd be like, I don't like you. You look weird. And you're just like, oh, I'm going to go home and cry.
Right.
Whereas now, no one would ever say a third of the shit that they say online to your face.
Right.
No one will ever do that. If someone, and after I did Aaliyah, I remember being really paranoid, thinking that someone was going to just come up and punch me in the face because of all of the hate that I got. There was so much hate that I got for taking on the role. And I was like, yo, you don't think that there are 20 more of me waiting for me to drop out so that they can get it? This movie's getting made whether I do it or not. Let me do it for the right reasons. And I was scared that in real life, someone was really going to try and hurt me. It was all in my head.
But it never, it didn't happen.
It was all in my head because I'm paranoid. But
that's
you
the
know,
thing is that, like, all the things.
It's not real.
Especially when you're growing up, or even if you're an adult, and all the things that you feel like make you different, that people go, you're different, whatever. Those are the things that you should embrace, because those are all the things that make you special.
Yeah.
And the more of those that you have that you feel different, the more unique you are.
Yeah.
And those are all the things that I'm sure you're able to call upon now and embrace that make you, you know, inspiring to other people who feel like, I feel like I've got, you know, 10 feet in different in different ponds and I don't know which one. It's like, you're all of those things and each one of those things.
But also believe that, like, I did not rise above. Like, I got expelled from a lot of schools for fighting because I didn't fit into so many different boxes that, and I was a kid. And if I knew then what I know now, you know, that old saying,
sure.
If I knew that my differences were what made me special, and if I just focused on those things, I would rise above in my own right. I think I'd be so much better off, but no one has that capacity, emotional, you know, wherewithal to think that when they're young. And so it's like, if everyone's coming at me, then I'm backed into a corner, fight or flight. I'm not going to joke my way out of this. I'm surrounded.
Right.
So yeah, it was. It's not easy, because when you're bullied, you just want to hit someone.
Mm-hmm.
And I, being who I am, was not afraid to do that.
I'm so jealous because I was.
You were so scared. Nah, dude. I got brothers, bruh.
Oh, there
I got,
you go.
I got brothers, so I not only know how to take a hit, but I know how to fight dirty. I'm talking sand in the eyes, hair pulling.
Go right for the stone.
Scratch.
Yeah.
Scratch,
yep.
Son. I kept my nails long.
Yeah.
Well, because you have to defend yourself.
Well, I think all of those things, you know, gave you strength and they gave you focus and it gave you armor.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is for anyone who feels like, oh, I feel, you know, fuck trying to fit in.
Yeah.
Because trying to fit in means that you're not creating something different and establishing something for yourself.
Well, you're lowering yourself. You're lessening yourself in order to make other people feel comfortable.
You're dampening your shine to fit into another system.
Fuck that. Brighten up or put on some sunglasses. Because mama's glowing. My last name Ship, but I'm always like, this ship is moving, honey. So either you get on board or you wait on the docks and you can enjoy the show from the shoreline.
And that is probably why, you know, as stressful and weird as this business can be, that you're probably have built in strength and skill sets to navigate it, because it is a weird at sometimes very unforgiving business that works for reasons that are shitty or unpredictable or who knows why.
Yeah.
And
I've stopped sharing my opinion unless people ask. So that's good.
Well, that's...
I stopped putting my foot in my mouth.
In general, I just think that's a good... And that's a very stoic idea of before you say something, asking yourself, is this something that needs to be said?
Right.
And sometimes the answer is yes.
Yeah.
And sometimes the answer is like, I'm just talking to talk.
Yeah, I'm just really hearing my own voice because you're hella silent right now. And I'm trying to fill the space.
So let's just be comfortable with the space.
Yeah.
I'll let you put your foot in your mouth.
You do it. It's cute when you do it. And then I just sit here nodding and smiling. But I mean, you have to kind of, it's a survival mechanism. It's a way to cope. And I think as adults and human beings, we have all found what works for ourselves. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it's not addiction, you know, but whatever you can find that helps you cope with all of the stress that goes into being an adult and that goes into having all of these different judgments. But honestly, I just keep my head down and I let my work speak for itself. And if I have an interview and someone's asking me questions, I'm always 100% real, 100% honest. But other than that, like, keep your mouth shut, put your head down, and let your resume speak for itself. Worry about your work. Because at the end of the day, in 20, 50, 60 years, people aren't going to be talking about a comment that I made.
Right.
On Twitter or on a red carpet at a comic convention.
Yeah, they're going to say, this performance changed my life. It inspired me. It made me
They're going to be shipping
connected.
That movie to the moon so that future alien generations eons later are going to be able to watch.
Yeah.
That's real. That's raw. That's what people are going to think about. I'm not thinking about Audrey Hepburn now. I'm thinking about all the things that she did.
Right.
And what that did to affect either social change or just affect an entire era.
You know, a friend of mine is a pretty successful actor. And when people ask him, they try to corner him in junkets and stuff, or they ask him political things or just like, you know, those landmines. It's like that. Sometimes people have a way of phrasing questions that are just fucking landmines. Wherever you step, it's going to blow up. And he just very quietly says, like, oh, I'm a dumb actor. I don't have – and he has a very soft British accent. He's like, oh, I'm a dumb actor. I don't have any opinion. I don't have anything smart to say about that. And it just, like, diffuses the whole thing because it's self-deprecating.
Yeah.
And it also is a way to sort of just, like
– Avoid the conflict.
And
yet at the same time, who are we if we're not using our platforms?
Yes, that's true. But you are not able to use your platform effectively in that situation.
Right, when it comes to politics. Unless we're talking about, like, you know, LGBTQ people being stoned or hung in Senate
hall. Yes.
Actually, you know what? I do have an opinion.
That's talking about, like, human rights violations. And, of course, people need to stand up for that. But I mean,
who'd you vote for? And he's like, honestly, I'm
that's
English.
What I'm talking about. Yeah, exactly. Or it's just if you're in a certain context, you know, like no matter what I say, they're going to flip this around. And the message, which would normally be helpful, is going to be lost because it's going to get turned into this other thing. But of course, and especially like on your own social media or like a place where you can fully explain, you know, express yourself.
Yeah.
Then that's important. But I just mean like the sort of junket landmines where it's like, I know what you're doing.
Yeah. They try and bait and switch you. And it doesn't matter how long you answer. They're going to pull from it with. They pull from it because they're the author.
And I'm just fuel for your clickbait fire.
Yeah. And look at that. You know, I'm out here trying to have interesting, intelligent conversations about what I'm doing. I'm here to talk about what I'm doing, and you're trying to take it and turn it into likes and favorites and shares because you think that is a sense of worth. And I'm so sorry that is how people see this world today. It is really sad that you think that likes and favorites and shares and trending on Twitter, whatever. It sucks that people think that means something because it doesn't. Are you a good person? Do you hold the door open for elderly people? Do you take care of your family? Do you love your friends? Do you support your friends? Are you there for them?
Do you think about other people when you don't have to?
Yeah. How do you treat waiters and bartenders and Uber drivers and valet people? That is a definition of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And it just sucks that that's not where our society is right now. But like we said, it's going to take 10 years and it's going to be a whole roundabout thing. All the time my friends are like, oh, you're not going on all these red carpets and doing all these events and you're not selling stuff on Instagram and you don't have a QR code that links to 20% off here and there and you could be making millions off of social media. And I'm like, one, thank you. Thank you so much.
That's so nice of you.
That's so nice of you.
I know. People like me. It's weird.
I know. It's wild. It's so great. One, thank you so much. Two, I have no interest in doing that type of stuff. I mean, mailbox money is great, but if it doesn't have anything to say behind it, then like if it doesn't have like a social cause, then I like don't want anything to do with it.
Yeah.
But also, like we were just saying, people are loving the fact that some artists don't have social media, that you have to actually get in your car and go and see their shows or go to their movies or whatever it is. And I think we're going to come back around to that. I think the world's going to come back around and realize that old school way of doing things is actually setting up for you to be able to really do something different.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a little, as a friend of mine refers to it, sweaty to be like, hey, everybody, like this picture, do this, like that. And, you know, I understand it because we do have to be marketers to kind of, you know, to do the thing that we want to be able to do. But people are getting desensitized to it and it's just becoming all noise. And I'm glad that you've been able to, you know, take this experience from you being a youngin in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
Which really doesn't feel like that long ago to
me. Wasn't.
Anyway,
it wasn't.
And be able to do something creative with it. And I think there's real power in that for you to inspire other people who felt the way that you felt to let them know you're not alone. What the things that make you different make you special.
Yeah.
And there are things that you can do to harness and use that energy for
good. Well, you're enough. I think it's so hard for people to realize that they're enough. That's all they want to hear. But guess what? You don't even have to hear it. You just have to hear it from yourself. You just have to tell yourself, I'm enough. Okay, so-and-so, we went on a date and they're not calling me back. And did I say something? Did I smell weird? What was it? It doesn't matter. It has nothing to do with you. What you do has nothing to do with me. What I do has nothing to do with anybody else. As long as we stay in that mindset, we're able to, well, I mean, I know it sounds a little selfish, but at the same time, we're able to take away the emotional attachment to the things that people do and say. And that even goes as far as allowing LGBTQ people to get married.
Right.
If we can have that mindset when it comes to something like that, we can have that mindset where it's like, I don't have to explain myself to you. I don't have to sell my Instagram and my Twitter to in order to have people like me. I don't care if you don't like me. It doesn't affect me that someone in the middle of buttfuck nowhere doesn't like me. That's okay. It has nothing to do with me. I'm going to live my best life. It's really hard to stay in that mindset. But, you know, that's where meditation and checking in with yourself really comes back. We're enough. We've always been enough because we're great. No one's going to do you better than you. How fire is that?
You are quite the ambassador for the millennial generation.
And oh my God, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. So I can make millions?
First of all, thank you. you look really sweet.
Second of all, kind of fuck you because I was trying to take a picture and you got in the way of it.
Definitely photobombed my selfie.
Yeah, you photobombed my selfie and I don't appreciate it.
And I dropped my stick and now I have to buy a new one for $4.99 in downtown LA. Fuck you.
I'm excited to see the things going to do. You have Dark Phoenix and you have Son of Shaft coming up.
Yes.
I'm interested to see you do like some like weird comedy stuff too.
Well, I just did a movie with Adam Devine and the guys who did The Hangover and Bad Moms.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Todd
so
Phillips?
I got to be, yes. No, not Todd Phillips.
Which guy, like the actors or the...
Oh, no, the writers. And
the writers.
The writer-directors.
Gotcha.
Cool. I just did a job with them and I got to be funny.
Fantastic.
Which was cool. I'm like, people think I'm funny, but I don't think people actually like think I could be funny on screen. And they really kind of believed in me. And that was really nice.
You'll start doing more of that stuff. And then when people see, then it'll be like...
Yeah. I mean, it's all dick jokes, but it's good dick jokes.
Yeah.
It's the good stuff.
That ultimately... What everyone needs is just a good dick joke.
Yeah, if you can't make fun of penises, can you really make fun of anything?
Yes, they're horrible looking. Of course, it's like they're just like...
They're terrible and yet beautiful. Come on.
Like troll dolls.
Yeah. Like, it's like a My Little Pony.
They're so ugly that they're adorable.
Yeah. It's like a little, it's like a, what are those kittens, those dwarf kittens?
Oh, those, or like those cats?
Yeah, or like, yeah, those dogs that have cleft palates, but they're really cute.
Right, right, right.
That's a dick.
Or like a or like a Sharpei.
Yeah, like it's all those wrinkles.
It's all wrinkly, but yeah, adorable.
But it's sweet. But it's, it loves peanut butter.
Wait, we're talking about...
The dog.
Oh, the dog.
Yeah, the dog. Yeah, yeah, the dog. Yeah, yeah, the dog. Yeah. I don't think...
If your dick likes peanut butter, that's all right, too. We're no, there's no judgment.
I don't know if that's a thing. Right? If it is, either. I'm pretty sure that that's called animal abuse.
We just thought of it, and so it is a thing somewhere.
Somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere it
Someone
is.
Someone did that.
Alexander Shipp, thank you so much for being here.
Thank
Congratulations on everything.
Thank you.
You're a goddamn delight!
Oh, wow. Thank you
thank you so much. You're enough. Thank you.
Oh, my God.
Thank you.
That was the Eddie Tenti podcast number 1003 with Alexandra Shipp. And this is Word Salad Wrap. I'm wondering, how many things in your life do you think are liabilities that might be assets? That, because so much of how we navigate the world, if not all, it revolve around the stories that we tell ourselves about ourselves. So what stories are you telling you about yourself? Do you have things that you, I mean, everyone has stuff about themselves, like, oh, I wish I were this, I wish I had this thing, or I wish I, you know, I don't like my arms, or I don't like this, or I don't like, my eyes are too close together. My eyes aren't close enough together. Who knows? What, it's a personality trait. But what things in your life do you think you might be able to view as assets? Because I tend to think, you know, I think, especially social media, it's just sort of a general human thing to want to be like everyone else, be like the crowd. Oh, if I just look like this, if I just had this, if I just did that, I would be part of a community, I would be accepted. But I just feel like all the things that make you different make you unique. And uniqueness is good because the world likes uniqueness and you should like uniqueness. So what stories are you telling you about yourself? And is there a way to see the positives in those things, or to see how they can be used to your advantage, or see how they could use, like, that your uniqueness and what makes you different actually sets you apart from everyone else and makes you stand out, as opposed to rushing to fit in all the time? I mean, being a part of community is obviously important, but to want to be a part of something at all costs, at a cost of your sanity, your health, your you, is that good? I mean, I don't think it is, but you may say, well, what if I tell myself a story about something where that's an asset, and what if I'm wrong? What if I'm lying to myself? And I would say, like, well, you're probably telling yourself a negative story where you're lying to yourself, where you're like, I'm just the worst. You're not the worst. Or I'll never be able to dot, dot, dot. It's likely that that is not the case. But we are all storytellers. Humans are storytellers. Everything about humanity is a story. And I think we forget sometimes that we're, in a lot of cases, the author of our own story. I mean, again, you can't author the world around you externally, but you can certainly author what's in your head. You can author how you perceive it. You can author how you perceive yourself. Are there reasons you're so down on yourself? Are there reasons, you know, that you feel like you deserve to beat yourself up? And how can you dislodge those? Because you don't deserve to do those things to yourself. And so what kinds of stories can you be telling yourself? I mean, I sometimes say to myself, like, oh, I don't know. I don't want to, you know, if I say I'm good at something, what if I'm wrong? Or if I say I can achieve something, what if I'm wrong? Or what if I, it's like, so what? You know, are you wrong if you tell yourself that you suck worse than everyone else? Yeah, probably. So why do you accept the negative storytelling when that's probably not real? Isn't it better to go for positive storytelling? It doesn't make you an arrogant asshole to accept that you might be good at something or to accept that you're good enough. Keeping yourself down doesn't do you any favors, and it doesn't do the world any favors. And in a way, it's almost a little selfish because it kind of, you know, puts you in a position where people are like, oh, poor you. You don't have to do that to yourself. You deserve better than that. And there are definitely things about you that you probably don't even realize are assets. And there are definitely things that you think are wrong with you that actually are the things that are right with you. So how do you do that? Maybe write them down. Just see it from a different perspective. Sometimes looking at yourself, when you can write stuff down, you can look at yourself as, you know, as data points and have a little bit more of a third person perspective rather than a first person perspective on it and say, okay, well, if I'm not the type of person where X, Y, and Z were to be true, what if I were? How would I see those things? You know, instead of saying what if to catastrophize, what if the worst thing happens? You know, what if I'm good at this? What does that look like? What if I can use this? What if I would be able to achieve this thing and do it successfully and be happy about it? What type of person would I need to be to look at this in a positive, constructive way? So, you know, work on your storytelling. We all have stories in our brain, and we think that because our brains tell us things that those are some sort of personal law, and it's not true. You don't have to believe everything your brain tells you. You can write the story of you. And so that's just the little nugget today for today's Word Salad Wrap. I hope you're having a wonderful day or night or evening or middle of the night, whatever it is. And as always, I appreciate you. And I will see you in your ears very soon. All right. A good day.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.